From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we discuss the Carlyle Group, the controversial private equity firm, which is heavily invested in the defense and aerospace industries and very well connected to the Bush administration. Its roster of ex-government officials include George Bush Sr., James Baker III, and Frank Carlucci. We'll talk with business journalist Dan Briety, author of the book The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. The book raises many questions about conflict of interest and the revolving door between politics and the defense industry. We'll also talk with Carlyle spokesperson Chris Ullman. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President Bush has declared disaster areas in parts of Kansas and Missouri that were hit by tornadoes on Sunday. The declaration clears the way for federal loans and other assistance to tornado victims. Laura Spencer reports from member station KCUR in Kansas City.
Federal Emergency Management Agency Director Michael Brown announced federal funding would be made available to 7 counties in Kansas and 39 in Missouri after touring the damage in both states. 600 structures in Wyandotte County in northeast Kansas, including many homes, are damaged or destroyed. Street crews are helping pick up the debris, which could take several weeks. The deadly storms caused an estimated $30 million worth of damage in Kansas City alone. In Missouri, 14 counties will also be eligible for additional aid to help with debris removal, cleanup, and repair of public buildings. For NPR News, I'm Laura Spencer in Kansas City.
President Bush has named a former State Department counterterrorism chief as the top civil administrator for Iraq. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Paul Bremer, also known as Jerry, is expected to go to Iraq next week to put a civilian face on the U.S. military occupation. He will outrank retired Army General Jay Garner, who currently heads the post-war team. The Pentagon and the State Department have been fighting over personnel on that team and over more serious matters concerning the future of Iraq. President Bush insisted Bremer is going with the full confidence of all members of the administration.
In selecting Jerry Bremer, our country will be sending one of our best citizens. He's a man with enormous experience. He's a person who knows how to get things done. He's a can-do type person.
Bremer was an executive assistant to former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and after leaving the State Department, he joined Kissinger Associates. He currently works for Marsh Crisis Consulting. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
Budget Director Mitch Daniels is leaving the Bush administration. His departure comes as the president is trying to get Congress to pass a scaled-back version of his tax cut proposal. White House spokesman Ari Fleischer says he doesn't think the proposal will suffer because Daniels is leaving.
It very well may be done, thanks to the help of Mitch Daniels. We'll see exactly what the timing is as Congress acts, but Mitch, as always, has been very effective and a team player for this president. He will continue to do that during these 30 days. So I don't think there's anything here connected with the economic plan.
Daniels is expected to run for governor in his home state of Indiana. Meanwhile, the House Ways and Means Committee has approved a trimmed-down version of President Bush's tax cut proposal. The $550 billion measure passed on a party-line vote of 24 to 15. In stocks today, the Dow gained 56 points to close at 8,588 in heavy trading. The Nasdaq was up 19 points to close at 1523. This is NPR News. The State Department says that former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and members of his family took about $1 billion in hard currency from Iraq's central bank just before the start of the war. Spokesman Richard Boucher said he was confirming the basic information in a New York Times story today. European Union health ministers have backed away from a proposal to screen travelers from areas affected by the SARS virus. Douglas Baxton reports from Luxembourg City.
Officials say the idea of screening incoming travelers was backed by Italy in an emergency meeting of the ministers, but Germany and others opposed it. Germany's junior health minister, Klaus-Theo Schroeder, said this would create a false sense of security. This view was backed by Gro Harlem Brundtland, the director general of the World Health Organization. The WHO favors screening passengers when they leave affected areas rather than when they arrive in SARS-free countries. Greece's health minister, Kostas Stanafis, who chaired the meeting, said it backed administrative screening on entry, such as questionnaires given to passengers. Just over 30 probable SARS cases have been reported in Europe, and there have been no deaths. The illness has mostly been confined to Asia. For NPR News, I'm Douglas Faction in Luxembourg City.
Three would-be migrants from Cuba swam ashore today in Florida after successfully resisting Coast Guard efforts to pick them up. The Coast Guard intercepted four men in a small wooden boat and arrested one, but three men jumped overboard and managed to reach Key Largo after treading water for several hours. Cubans who are intercepted are usually returned to Cuba, while those who reach land in the United States are generally allowed to apply for asylum. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Enterprise Florida and the Tampa Bay Partnership for Regional Economic Development. Tampa Bay, the climate is right for business. On the web at tampabay.us.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The revolving door between government and the defense industry has raised many questions about conflict of interest and special access. Such questions have been raised about the Carlyle Group, a private equity firm which buys and sells companies from around the world. The Carlyle Group is heavily invested in the defense and aerospace industries, and it's well connected to the Bush administration. For example, former President George H.W. Bush is a paid advisor to the company. My guest Dan Brighty has written a new book called The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. The Iron Triangle is an expression for the intersection of politics, big business, and the military. Dan Brighty is a business journalist who has written for Forbes, Wired, and Red Herring. A little later, we'll hear from a spokesperson for the Carlyle Group. I asked journalist Dan Brighty to explain what the Carlyle Group does.
Well, the best way to explain the Carlyle Group is to use a euphemism that Dwight Eisenhower employed back in the 1960s when he was leaving office. He warned the country against the formation of something called the military-industrial complex. And that is probably the best way to describe what the Carlyle Group does. They are a very large $15.8 billion private equity firm that invests in heavily government-regulated industries like defense, like aerospace, healthcare, telecommunications. And the way that they do this is they employ a number of ex-politicians, very prominent ex-politicians, like George Bush Sr., James Baker III, Frank Carlucci, a former Secretary of Defense under Reagan, John Major, former UK Prime Minister. And they use these guys to help them build their portfolios, bring in investments from around the world, and then also to scour the investment landscape, in particularly these government-regulated industries, to help them make better decisions.
There's a couple of firsts that the Carlyle Group represents. It's the first time a former president has worked on behalf of a defense contractor.
Yeah, and I think that this is the most important point about the Carlyle Group. There are a number of conflicts of interest that arise when you have this many politicians and ex-politicians on board who are going sort of in and out of administrations. But the most important one that needs to be pointed out is the fact that George Bush Sr. is working for this company, which is the 11th largest defense contractor in the country. Mm-hmm. At the same time, his son is in office and waging war against Iraq and against terrorism. This is a very clear conflict of interest, and there have been groups in Washington, public interest groups, some very conservative in nature, who have called for the resignation of George Bush Sr. because they feel that it undermines the credibility of his son in office.
Now, there is the appearance of a conflict, but has there actually ever been a conflict of interest posed by the fact that George Bush Sr. is affiliated with the Carlyle Group while his son is president of the United States?
Well, there's a semantical issue here. There's clearly a conflict of interest. Whether that conflict has resulted in the influence of a decision on behalf of George W. Bush or anyone else, Donald Rumsfeld, who's very close with Frank Carlucci, it's not clear whether this kind of influence peddling is effective or not. There have been examples of times that have been widely reported in the press where George Bush Sr. has advised his son while in office on foreign policy decisions, both in Saudi Arabia and South Korea. Carlyle Group has extensive investments in both South Korea and Saudi Arabia. And so when you start to see a pattern like that, you raise the red flag, but taking the next step into, you know, whether decisions were made in a corrupt fashion is a very large leap to make and very difficult to prove.
You say the scandal here isn't what's illegal. Nothing illegal has necessarily gone on here. You say the scandal is what's legal. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're starting to see this more and more now, especially with the procurement process that's going on for the rebuilding of Iraq. There is an accepted way of doing business in Washington, D.C., hiring these former politicians, having them on the board of companies of which they have no experience in those industries, has become somewhat of an accepted practice. And like I said, there is very little regulation and almost no legislation that is keeping these people in check. So this is something that goes on relatively overlooked by any sort of legal standards.
Now, what does George Bush Sr., the former president, do with the Carlyle Group?
Well, he does a couple things. The first thing he does is give speeches around the world. So he's been known to travel all throughout Asia, to Kuwait, to Saudi Arabia, give speeches, pack the house with very wealthy individuals in order to extract their money and put it into funds for the Carlyle Group. But he also meets with business leaders around the world. He meets with political leaders. And these are much more direct business practices that he is involved with the Carlyle Group.
Now, George W. Bush, our current president, was once affiliated with the Carlyle Group. What was his relationship to Carlyle?
George W. Bush was appointed as onto the board of a company called Cater Air, which is a now defunct company which did airline catering back in the early 90s. And he was on that board for about 4 years. Cater Air was an incredibly unsuccessful investment for Carlyle. They lost hundreds of millions of dollars on that investment. And George W. Bush actually ended up being pretty heavily criticized for his role in that company during his gubernatorial campaign in Texas in 1994.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dan Brayaty. He's the author of the new book, The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. Now, Frank Carlucci was the chairman of Carlyle. He's now chairman emeritus.
That's correct.
One of the questions that's been raised about Frank Carlucci, who is, well, let's start with what his credentials are.
Frank Carlucci has been in just about every position of public servancy in the United States government imaginable. He was Secretary of Defense. He was Deputy Director of the CIA. He served in various capacities as foreign ambassadors during the 70s. And his pedigree is extensive in federal government.
Okay, so one of the questions that was raised about him is, does he have special access to Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld? Because they were good friends in college. They wrestled together. I guess they were on the same wrestling team. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right.
They were roommates?
Frank Carlucci and Don Rumsfeld went to Princeton University together. They were roommates, and they were on the wrestling team together. And they are very good friends. So the obvious thing to infer there is whether Frank Carlucci, as the chairman of a very large defense contractor, has any sway with Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense. And the best we were able to do in turning up any evidence of that were some letters that Frank Carlucci sent to Donald Rumsfeld lobbying for various policy changes in the Pentagon and even sending some letters to Secretary of State Colin Powell, lobbying for some foreign affairs changes to take place, which is exactly the kind of thing that blurs the boundary between a private citizen working in the private sector and someone who has been a career politician. It's very difficult to tell where those two things leave off.
Okay, so it's maybe easier to get a letter to Donald Rumsfeld if you're his old college buddy. On the other hand, if we look at the latest development in this, there's a weapons system that one of the Carlyle-owned companies, United Defense, was developing. It's called the Crusader, and it was this very contemporary howitzer, the most powerful howitzer or cannon that would have ever been made. Donald Rumsfeld was one of the people who wanted to kill the Crusader, even though, you know, Frank Carlucci and Carlyle wanted to see this built. And in fact, it was finally killed. And in fact, Donald Rumsfeld fired, or at least just accepted the resignation of the Secretary of the Army, Thomas White, who was an advocate of building this crusader.
Right.
So this would argue that, well, that influence really doesn't go very far, does it?
That's right. It does, on the surface, it does appear that way. And there certainly were a lot of shenanigans that went on behind the saga of the Crusader and of United Defense. But it's important to point out in this whole story that United Defense made Carlisle a lot of money. Shortly after September 11th, they were able to take the company public. They made $237 million in one day. In that IPO. This was just after Congress passed the new defense budget in December of 2001. So United Defense was able to go public despite the fact that the Crusader had been on the chopping block for years and years before that, well into the Clinton administration as well. This gun had survived successive rounds of budget cuts miraculously over time. And then also another important thing is to remember is that though Donald Rumsfeld did kill the Crusader program in a very public announcement and made a very big show of that, there was a new gun contract awarded to United Defense the very same day that the program was canceled. That was not as big of a press announcement.
The story that helped make the Carlisle Group the subject of a lot of speculation was the fact that the Bin Laden family was involved with the Carlisle Group. And this came to a lot of public attention after September 11th, when the name of Bin Laden started to really register in the minds of many Americans. And George Bush Sr. Was involved with Carlisle Group at the same time the Bin Laden family was. What was the connection of the Bin Laden family to the Carlisle Group?
Well, the Bin Laden family is an investor in the Carlisle Group. They were an investor in a fund called Carlisle Partners II, which is one of the largest defense funds for Carlisle. And the irony of that whole situation that emerged after September 11th was that the Bin Laden family stood to gain financially because they were invested in this defense fund from the war that was being waged essentially against their son, Osama. So it was a tragic irony, and the Carlisle Group picked up on it right away and divested themselves from the family.
So the Bin Laden family is no longer affiliated with the Carlisle Group?
That's correct.
And the Bin Laden family said that they were no longer in contact with their son, Osama, at the time that they were involved with the Carlisle Group?
That's right. They've disavowed Osama back in the early 90s.
At the very least, it certainly seemed ironic that at the same time that George Bush Sr. and the Bin Laden family were involved with the Carlisle Group, that George Bush's son, George W. Bush, President of the United States, was declaring war against Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, it was terribly ironic, and after the press picked up on it, it was something that the Carlisle Group couldn't bear anymore, and they obviously had to take some action, and they did. But in some ways, you know, this is a coincidence. It's a small world when you're talking about international finance and people who have the kind of money that can invest in a company like Carlisle. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars just to get in the door for a company like this. So, and I think that some of the conspiracy theories that sprouted around this relationship between the Bushes and the Bin Ladens serves to undermine what's really important about this story, which is the revolving door between politics and business, a practice that has become generally accepted in this country and entirely unregulated. That's, I think, the important story here, not these connections between the shocking names of the folks in the Middle East.
My guest is business journalist Dan Briety, author of a new book about the Carlisle Group called The Iron Triangle. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Just joining us, my guest is Dan Briety. He's the author of the new book, The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlisle Group. How did the Carlisle Group get started?
They got started back in 1987 as a leveraged buyout firm, which was the big thing to do back in the late 80s. Their first deal was something called the Great Eskimo Tax Scam. That's how it was known within the office. Essentially, what the company was doing was shuttling money between Eskimo-owned companies who were losing money, selling those losses to profitable companies in the United States as a tax shelter, and then they were brokering these transactions for a cut of the fee.
So this was taking advantage of a tax loophole that was written for Eskimo businesses?
That's right. They pushed billions of dollars through this tax loophole and ultimately cost the federal government quite a big chunk of change in tax money, and also made themselves between $10 and $20 million in the process.
Who founded the company?
The company was founded by two guys. One is David Rubenstein, who was an aide in the Carter administration, a very young aide. He was 27 years old at the time, and at the time he was also known as one of the most dedicated public servants around. The other guy was Stephen Norris, who was a tax genius over at Marriott Corp. And the two of them got together literally to do this tax loophole and to make some money off of it. And after they found that they were making so much money, they decided to incorporate.
Now, you said that the Carlyle Group specialized in leveraged buyouts when they got started. Explain what a leveraged buyout is.
Sure. A leveraged buyout is essentially when a company borrows money from wealthy individuals and takes that money and invests it for them in the practice of buying out a company. So it works much in the same way that a mutual fund works. When you hand your money over to a mutual fund advisor and then that advisor then goes and buys stocks on behalf of you, this works the same way, except they're buying entire companies, usually privately held companies, instead of buying stocks with your money. And it's open to only the very, very wealthiest of people. Most of these funds have a minimum of $1 million, usually much more, in order to even get in.
And with a company like the Carlyle Group, sometimes after buying a company, once the company becomes profitable, it'll sell the company.
That's right. So the idea is to turn the company around for a profit. And you could do this a number of ways. One, you can break it up and sell it off for parts, which is one of the nastier ways of doing business in the LBO business. Or you can help that company to turn their business around and then sell them 2, 3, 5 years later at a severe profit. And that's what Carlyle specializes in.
How did Carlyle start to buy up defense companies, defense-oriented companies?
Well, in 1989, they hired a guy by the name of Frank Carlucci, who was the Secretary of Defense under Reagan. He was coming out of that administration, and he had spent most of his time as Secretary of Defense revamping the procurement process around the Pentagon. Now, this came in handy now that he was in the private sector and working for a financial institution, because he directed the Carlyle Group into the defense buyout business. So he started identifying defense companies that were down on their luck, of which there were many because the Cold War had just ended in 1989. So he was able to direct the company into buying a lot of devalued defense properties and then spruce them up and turn them around. And by the time that the Gulf War came about in the early 90s, those property values skyrocketed again, and Carlyle did very well.
So some of those properties had lost money because of the end of the Cold War, when our country was demilitarizing, and then they became more profitable during the Gulf War.
That's exactly right. These things work in cycles, so you have to time it perfectly, and they did that in that case.
What's one of the defense companies that the Carlyle Group bought that turned into one of its most lucrative investments?
Well, two companies really stand out in that regard. The first is BDM, which is a defense consultancy that is now owned by TRW, which is one of our largest defense contractors here in the United States. BDM was a company that the Carlyle Group bought early on and for a very, very cheap and deflated price, because it was in that fallow period between the end of the Cold War and the beginning of the Gulf War. And they got a great price on it. Defense values started to skyrocket again in the early 90s, and BDM, I think they turned something like a 300 or 400% profit on that company. The other company that stands out is United Defense, which we've talked about already, and that's a company that makes the Bradley fighting vehicles and the Paladin gun systems that we've seen on TV so much during the war in Iraq. And this company made Carlyle hundreds of millions of dollars in a very short amount of time after they were able to take it public after September 11th.
Does Carlyle still own United Defense?
They own stock in United Defense. United Defense is now a public company, so it's publicly held by shareholders.
Are there companies that lost a lot of money for the Carlyle Group?
Yeah, they've had, especially in the beginning, they had a lot of flops. They were trying to get their feet on the ground, and they weren't sure what kind of business they were going to go into. And before Frank Carlucci came on board and directed them towards defense, they tried to buy some restaurant chains, they tried to buy some real estate companies, and many of those were failures.
Although the Carlyle Group has a much higher profile now than it did before September 11th, and although there are even a lot of like conspiracy theories floating around about the Carlyle Group, it seems to actually be heading in a more mainstream direction now. I mean, maybe moving away from the defense industry, moving away even from government connections. The new chairman is the former head of IBM.
Yeah, the new chairman is Lou Gerstner, former CEO of IBM. And Lou has pledged to give 20% of his time to Carlyle Group. I'm not sure how he'll divvy that up, but that's what the press release says. And yeah, you're right. They have diversified extensively. They're into everything from healthcare to telecommunications. They own bottling companies. They own media properties. They own just about everything. But the defense and aerospace business is still important to them, although they've been trying to downplay that as of late, obviously for fear of bad publicity. But it is still a very important business. It makes up a little less than 15% of their business, and they're certainly not slowing down in that area. They've recently closed on a deal to buy the UK's Ministry of Defense Research Agency, a company called Kinetech. This is akin to DARPA here in the United States. And they've also recently closed on a deal to buy the defense and aerospace assets of Fiat, which is an Italian company.
Dan Briody is the author of The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Bantam Books, a division of Random House, publisher of Villa Incognito, a novel by Tom Robbins, author of Fierce Invalids Home from Hot Climates. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more on the revolving door between politics and the defense industry. We continue our conversation with business journalist Dan Briody about the Carlyle Group, and we talk with Chris Ullman, spokesperson for the Carlyle Group.
Thank you.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with business journalist Dan Briety, author of The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group is a private investment firm which is heavily invested in the defense and aerospace industries. Its roster includes several high-powered former government officials, such as George Bush Sr., James Baker, and Frank Carlucci. Briety's book raises many questions about conflict of interest and the revolving door between government and the defense industry. Having done the research that you did into the Carlyle Group, where do you think conflict of interest, access, the revolving door may have actually come into play the most?
Well, I do think that the relationship between Frank Carlucci and Don Rumsfeld is something that needs to be more closely looked at. And I do think that the relationship, obviously, between George Bush Sr. And his son is something that cannot stand. It is clearly a conflict of interest, and conflict of interests lead to potential corruption. And so that's why we try to eliminate conflicts of interest in our political system. And that's why Dick Cheney had to sell all of his stock in Halliburton. That's why people need to divest themselves from certain companies. These are family ties. These are close friends. This is a way that America has done business for a long time. We've just never seen the kind of setup that Carlyle has in our history. It's entirely unique.
Yeah, as you say, business has been conducted like this for a long time. You could argue that most fields are really, when it comes to the people at the top, a small world. And in most fields, the people at the top, they know each other. And they're going to have special access to each other because when you get to the top, it's a small world.
That's right. And I think that's okay. That's a way that Americans have done business for a long time. But I do think that when you're talking about some of the people involved being the President of the United States, the Secretary of Defense, the President of the United States' father, then something needs to be done, whether it's a little more regulation, possibly some legislation, but it would make me rest easier if something was done about it.
What kind of regulation has been proposed, if any, that would help regulate that revolving door?
None that I'm aware of. We're starting to see a lot more attention on this issue right now, especially with what's going on with the bidding process for Iraq and Dick Cheney's ties to Halliburton. And I think that's a very positive development. I think people are starting to become aware of just how tight-knit this community has gotten and the access that some of these folks are allowed and how much we've come to accept this way of doing business. So I think the more focus we have on this, the more change is likely to come about.
Did you come across a lot of Carlyle Group-related conspiracy theories when you were researching the group?
Yeah, and some of them came from some surprising sources. There was a congresswoman by the name of Cynthia McKinney, with whom I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar. She levied a claim that George W. Bush actually allowed the events of September 11th to happen because of the advantages that Carlyle Group would gain as a result. Now, this kind of conspiracy theory is irresponsible, it's reckless, and it really undermines what we're trying to accomplish in bringing these conflicts of interest out. These conflicts of interest, the revolving door, it's a much more subtle and insidious problem than these conspiracy theorists would have you believe. Those are outrageous claims, and they tend to make the real issues here easily dismissible.
You know, when it comes to conflict of interest, it's easy to argue that, well, you know, of course people who serve in defense-oriented positions within the United States government are going to be the people who understand the defense industry the best, and likewise people in the defense industry are the people who are most likely to comprehend that industry and do well serving in government in defense-related positions. And in that sense, you know, the revolving door, you could argue, is you know, almost a good thing because these are the people in the know who know about both sides of that particular fence.
That's right, and I agree with that, which is why I think it's important that we don't take this issue too far. We don't get into the conspiracy theories, and we stay away from that and keep our eye on the ball, so to speak, in terms of making sure that there aren't direct financial connections between decisions that are being made in office and the folks who are benefiting from them in the private sector. Now, there is certainly more subtle legislation that has been written in the past for other kind of situations like this. I don't think it would be difficult to do in this particular area. But your point is well taken. In the case of Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root putting out the oil well fires in Iraq, it may very well be that that is the best company to do that job. And just because Dick Cheney used to work for that company does not mean we should not award that contract to Kellogg Brown and Root. So we don't want to get into a situation where we're actually making bad policy decisions because the conflicts of interest are there. We just want to try to mitigate and get rid of the conflicts of interest whenever possible.
Are you personally surprised, and this is just your personal reaction, are you personally surprised that George Bush Sr. has not stepped down and tried to end that particular part of the controversy surrounding the Carlyle Group?
Yeah, I think that's the most troubling single thing about this story for me. It seems to me like George Bush Sr. should have plenty of opportunities in international finance without getting involved in a company that's heavily invested in defense. And certainly it would seem that he would want to resign or recuse himself from any position that threatened the credibility of his son while he was making such an important political decision. And the fact that he has not done that is very surprising to me and frankly, very confounding.
Dan Brioti, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dan Brioti is the author of The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. Coming up, Carlyle spokesperson Chris Ullman. This is Fresh Air. We just heard from Dan Brioti, whose book The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group, raises many questions about conflict of interest and the revolving door between government and the defense industry. Chris Ullman is the spokesperson for the Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group is the world's largest private equity investment company. It manages about $60 billion in assets. The Carlyle Group is heavily invested in the defense and aerospace industries, but they've become more diversified in the past few years. Would you estimate what percentage of Carlyle's holdings have to do with the defense industry?
Interestingly, only around 6%. In our early days, back in the late 80s and early to mid-90s, that figure was higher. But as Carlyle has diversified both in terms of the geographies we serve, because we have offices in Asia and Europe also, as well as the type of investing we do, buyout, venture capital, real estate, for example, that percentage has gone way down to only around 6% for outright defense and around another 7% for aerospace, which is, for the most part, commercial aerospace.
So when the defense holdings were at their highest, what percentage of the holdings was it?
It was probably closer to 40, 50, 60%, depending on the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any concerns about the revolving door between government and the defense industry?
Well, that's an interesting catchphrase, but I think what people need to consider are the specifics of every situation. So take Frank Carlucci, for example. He's a former Secretary of Defense, and he joined the Carlyle Group in 1989. So for the past 14 years, he has been out of public service and in the private sector. And Mr. Carlucci makes a point of not discussing Carlyle activities with former colleagues of his at the Department of Defense. And he goes out of his way, even though it would be acceptable and to do that, because the law says you have to refrain from engaging in any kind of lobbying or solicitation for a year after you leave office. So he's been out of office for 14 years, and so he actually holds himself to a higher standard by not lobbying or soliciting any kind of business from former colleagues at the Department of Defense. And I think if you look at someone like Mr. Carlucci or some of the other former senior government officials here at Carlisle, such as James Baker or Arthur Levitt or even former President Bush, they spent, in some cases, decades serving their country. And they have impeccable reputations. And one of the reasons they even joined us in the first place is because we have such a good reputation. And just as we were honored to be associated with them, they were pleased to be associated with us.
There are kind of two sides to the question of the revolving door between government and the defense industry. On one side, the people who had been in government and are in the defense industry have the potential of getting better access to people in government for better deals for their companies. On the other hand, the people who are in government could conceivably be making decisions that would be favorable to industry in the hopes that when they get out of government, they will be rewarded with a lucrative consulting contract or a lucrative position in the defense industry. So those are just two of the concerns about the revolving door. Because there are so many people who have been involved with government, such as former President Bush, former Secretary of State James Baker, Frank Carlucci, who also used to be a deputy director of the CIA, Carlisle Group has been a real focus of that concern of the revolving door. So, I mean, talk a little bit more about whether you see those concerns as being relevant to the Carlisle Group.
Mm-hmm. Well, a little background here, Terry. Carlisle has 500 employees around the globe, 300 of whom focus on actually doing the investments. So if you look at the number of former senior government officials, it's less than 10. So in perspective, there really aren't that many. Nonetheless, they are notable people. But I always like to be able to put that in perspective for people, because the people who actually do all the work here have MBAs from Harvard and Stanford and Wharton and are experts in investing. Now, in terms of some of the specifics you brought up about the so-called revolving door. Once again, I think it's very important to look at the facts of each situation. So take the United Defense. United Defense is a defense contractor that's based in Arlington, Virginia, that Carlisle used to own all of it. The company went public. Now we own a little less than half of it. That company used to have a contract with the government to produce a very large gun called a Crusader. In fact, there was an $11 billion contract with the Department of the Army to produce this gun over the next several years. And interestingly, that gun was funded for 8 consecutive Clinton budgets. And soon after coming into office, President Bush canceled the contract.
But was United Defense given a new contract after the Crusader was canceled?
An $11 billion contract was canceled, and a much, much, much smaller contract was granted. The goal was to capture some of the technology and intellectual property that had been created over the previous 9 years that taxpayers had paid for, so that that could be captured and used for next generation artillery. And we're pleased to get that contract, and we feel that the defense needs of the country will be well served. And if anything, it's a good way to ensure that taxpayer money wasn't wasted after all the development was put into that project.
The Carlyle Group represents the first time that a former president, George H.W. Bush, has gone to work for the defense industry. Plus, his son is the current president, and President George W. Bush used to be on the board of one of the companies owned by the Carlyle Group. There is the possibility that the Bush family will profit from the war in Iraq. Whether they will profit or not, I have no idea. But the point is that that relationship exists, and it's bound to raise certain questions. So how does the Carlyle Group deal with those questions that are obviously going to be raised?
Well, a couple of things. First, President Bush, former President Bush, is an advisor to Carlyle. His exclusive role is to give speeches at Carlyle events. Contrary to what some think, he does not work for the defense industry. Carlyle is an investment firm. 6% of our investments are in the defense sector. We are an investment firm. We are not the defense industry. So that's an important distinction. And one of the beautiful things about America is that after public service, people return to the private sector, and they are just everyday citizens. They are subject to the same laws as everyone else, and it's completely within the prerogative of a former government official to, you know, engage in business activities that are of interest to that person. And former President Bush chooses to be affiliated with us, something we're very proud of. He has decades of public service, commitment to his country. We are proud to have him affiliated with us. And I don't know what else to say.
As you say, it's perfectly legal. And one of the points that Dan Brayaty makes in his book about the Carlyle Group,
it's not what's illegal.
Well, exactly. He says that the scandal here isn't that something's illegal. The scandal is what is legal
but
how legal that revolving door is.
I definitely have to say this on the record.
Go ahead.
Well, it's all on the record, but
go ahead.
I'm going to say this. For the past decade, Carlyle has been poked and prodded, and people have peered beneath the hood. And for 10 years, people have made these types of accusations. And for 10 years, they have come up with nothing other than hot air about the hint of the hint of the hint of impropriety. And you know what? It's about time that people either put up or shut up regarding this issue. Because people like George Bush, Frank Carlucci, James Baker have served their countries well. They are wonderful public servants. For decades, I mean, if you put it all together cumulatively, it would be probably close to 40, 50, 60 years they've served this country. And they have stellar reputations. And, you know, sadly, none of them seems to be given, in today's climate, any benefit of the doubt. That in Brayaty's book, he implies that the current and the former president would sell out their country to benefit Carlyle. That is offensive, unsubstantiated, and the mark of an irresponsible journalist.
The question that we've been raising on the show today is about the revolving door, and it's a question that isn't just about the Carlyle Group. It's a question in general about the potential or the reality of conflict of interest. And it's a question that a lot of professions face, even journalists face the question of conflict of interest in a lot of stories, too, and anguish about it all the time. I want to ask you about another thing that has been the subject of a lot of speculation in the Carlyle Group, and this is something very specific to the Carlyle Group, mm-hmm. and that's the question of, after September 11th, a lot of people learned that the Bin Laden family was very heavily invested in the Carlyle Group. So, you know, here's a company in which former President Bush, father of the current president, is involved with the Carlyle Group. And then Osama bin Laden's family, and the family had says that they had already disassociated with him by then, but Osama bin Laden's family is associated with the same group. And, you know, what it means, I don't know, but you look at it and you go like, wow, that's really unusual, isn't it? You came on to handle public relations for Carlyle shortly after September 11th. What are some of the things you heard, speculation-wise, about what that might mean? You know, the bin Laden family and George Bush Sr. being involved with the same company. And how did you go about trying to respond to it?
It was challenging at a minimum because, unfortunately, as Vince Foster said in his diary, destroying people is sport in this city. So too often, people shoot before they ask questions. They assume the worst before they find out the facts. So my goal on behalf of Carlyle has been to get people to slow down, take a deep breath, and find out the facts. A journalist calls me up and says, what's the situation with Bush and bin Laden and Carlyle? In the past, we probably would have put our head in the sand. Now, we tell people what the situation is.
Which is?
Which is that prior to September 11th, the bin Laden family threw an investment arm called Saudi Bin Laden Group, which is, and this is another fact that's important, completely reputable and respected family in Saudi Arabia, which actually did work for the U.S. government on a number of occasions in the Middle East from a construction standpoint. That family, through that organization, was invested in a fund, Carlyle's 23 funds, that had defense investments. So we mutually agreed after September 11th, to buy them out of that fund. And so we just started telling people that.
My guest is Chris Ullman, spokesperson for the Carlyle Group. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Chris Ullman, spokesperson for the Carlyle Group, a private equity company which is heavily invested in the defense and aerospace industries and has several high-powered former government officials on its roster, including former President George Bush. Getting back to the issue of conflict of interest, in some situations, people go out of their way to avoid the appearance of conflict of interest so that the question is never raised. And in that respect, a lot of people have wondered why George Bush Sr. hasn't resigned from his position on the Carlyle Group, not because there necessarily has been a conflict, but to avoid the possible appearance of a conflict.
You're going to have to ask President Bush about that. I mean, I cannot speak on his behalf.
Is that issue discussed within Carlyle?
I will not speak on his behalf. I will try to address the issue in principle.
Right. I'm wondering if it's an issue that's even, if it comes up.
I mean, the larger principle is this, and I will try to then get down to the smaller principle.
But sure.
The larger principle is this, is that there once was a time when impropriety was the measure of impropriety. Now it's the hint of the hint of the hint of impropriety by someone like Dan Brighty, who has an agenda, or someone like, you know, some of these self-appointed do-gooder organizations, like the Center on Public Integrity, where the facts they know are facts they read in the newspaper. They don't call here asking for facts because they're not interested in the truth. They have an agenda. And it is wrong to impugn the integrity of a committed former public servant just because of the hint of the hint of the hint of impropriety.
But again, I'm not trying to impugn President Bush, but just to rather raise the question about avoiding the appearance of a possible conflict of interest in the same way that a judge would recuse himself or herself from hearing a case that had to do with one of his or her special interests or attachments, in the same way that a journalist wouldn't cover a story that they had a personal investment in. Again, to avoid the possible appearance of conflict of interest.
To imply that there's even the hint of a possible conflict here, I'm at a loss to see it, to be totally honest, because can you explain it to me? See, this is what people don't do. They say, all right, I'm asking this with a total straight face. What is the hint of impropriety? That George Bush is giving advice to his son on a macro geopolitical issue that could somehow benefit him. Is that's it?
Well, you know, if you look at the possibilities, and I'm not saying this has happened, but again, the appearance of a possible conflict, there's the possibility that the president would even have in the back of his mind, if I do this in North Korea or if I do this in Saudi Arabia, it might have a bad effect on the company my father works with. Again, I'm not saying that that's happening, but again, getting to the idea that sometimes people recuse themselves to prevent the appearance of a possible conflict of interest.
What this line of thinking includes is if. And what it leaves out is the integrity of the people we're dealing with. And one of the great things about the American political system is that we have laws, and we have regulations, and we have the letter of the law, and we have the spirit of the law. But in the end, you have to rely on the integrity of the people you're dealing with. And to my knowledge, no one has ever questioned the integrity of former President Bush. And I think it's a little late to start questioning it now after 30-plus years of public service.
Chris Olin, thank you very much for talking with us.
Terry, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Chris Olin is spokesperson for the Carlyle Group. Earlier, we heard from Dan Briety, author of The Iron Triangle, Inside the Secret World of the Carlyle Group. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Tapes and transcripts of Fresh Air are available at 1-877-213-7374 or on the Internet at www.burrells.com. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Harcourt, publisher of Odd Girl Out by Rachel Simmons, about the hidden culture of female bullying and cruelty among girls and how people can help. Available in paperback. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, actor John Malkovich. He directed the new film The Dancer Upstairs. Also, we talk with Sarah Waters, author of a trilogy of lesbian-themed novels set in Victorian England. The first one, Tipping the Velvet, was adapted into a BBC miniseries that will be shown this month on public television. Join us for the next Fresh Air.